Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you?
I heard you have a little funny commentary.
Oh, God. So right before coming to the show, so about 2 weeks ago, my washing machine started to act up.
Okay.
And it did, I thought, I put too many heavy things in there. I put a blanket in there and sheets and towels and all this stuff. And then at the end, the cycle was all wet at the bottom. It wasn't draining. I'm like, oh, really?
I hate that.
And you had to wring them all out. And then I had such compassion for our grandmothers and great grandmothers, you know, who used to have to wring everything out and put it up. So I'm like, okay, so probably there's a problem. Let me try another cycle. Let me just try it with a lighter load. So it's been working fine for two weeks. And of course, the other day, it decides to do the same thing. And I'm like, this wasn't even a heavy load, you know?
Right.
So I couldn't figure it out, whatever. So there was a guy who had fixed our refrigerator before. I'll give him a plug, actually. All-Star Appliance Repair. Anyway, great guy. He's very responsive. So he gets there today. So it's a $65 service charge.
Right.
But if you do the repairs, then, you know, he waives the $65 gets applied to the repairs. So, literally 10 minutes before the show, I get a phone call from him. He's there. He thinks it's either a clutch.
Okay.
Or a transmission. Who knew that a washing machine has a clutch?
This is hilarious.
So for the clutch, it's $285 to fix. For the transmission, it could be upwards of over $400.
Wow.
Well, a new washing machine is about, you can get one for $400
up
to
that.
Probably $1,000.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, and he says, but you have the good machine. I'm like, what is the good machine? Well, it doesn't have all the fancy bells and whistles. The new machines, you can only expect them to last 4, 5, 6 years because they have so many computerized little gadgets and things like that they just break down more easily. So now I'm like, okay, I can't make this decision right now. I don't really know. So now I have to eat the $65 because he has to come back. I have to pay the $65 again. So I now have a non-draining washing machine. No option of fixing it at this moment.
Right.
And a decision to make. So I just thought it was funny.
I might influence your decision. We have one of the fancy ones because it came with our house. And I'm obsessed with it.
You love it.
From George Jetson. Like, it is like silver. I could like fit in it. I'm obsessed with it. And like, it's been, I mean, I would spend money on like a nice washing machine like that because it's great. It even has like a hand wash cycle.
Yeah.
So, and it's like delicate. I just love it. So anyway, I hope that helps you.
That helps. So anyway, that was my little story of,
that's,
you know,
so
like,
funny.
Ah, come on. Give me 5 minutes to make the decision. But anyway, but All-Star Appliances.
That's so funny.
Great guy. Very responsive. You, what's up?
Okay, so this is so funny. So my younger son asked me the question I think every man wants to know. He said, Mom, why do you have so many shoes? He said this to me yesterday. In all seriousness, it was so funny. London, yeah.
He's almost going to be four.
He's four. And he noticed. I mean, it was a legitimate question. It's like, you know, he comes to my closet. He's like, you know, there are a lot of shoes
here. That is so funny. So did you ask him, and why do you have so many toys?
Or have so many moods? I mean,
so
please, I have a million. My list can go on for days.
What was your answer?
You know what? I just kind of laughed. I don't even think he was like, I think he was on to the next thing. I don't even think he was waiting for my answer. It was like shiny ball. Like he was, you know, on to the next thing. But it was just so funny. It was like, wow. I mean, it's true. It's like, you know, a little kid comes into class. It's like, why do you have? Because, you know, he's got, what, one pair of shoes, maybe two.
Right. Well, it's an easy question to answer, actually.
Yeah.
Because we have so many different styles of clothes. So
exactly.
We need shoes to match those. We have different environments in which to wear.
Yes.
At any given time, I have 4 pairs of shoes in my car.
I've
got a pair of tennis shoes.
Wow.
I've got a pair of like normal walking shoes that are not like tennis shoes. A pair of flip-flops.
Oh,
so
that's
smart. Three at least. And then maybe some fancy pair just in case. Who knows where we'll end up at the end of the night, right?
Oh, that's pretty smart. So you're like a closet in your car.
I'm a closet in my car.
Yeah.
Yes, which doesn't make the car smell very good sometimes after I've just taken a long
walk. My car is like a pantry. It's disgusting. There's everything. There's dried food in there. It is just nasty.
Well, no doubt. But you see, you have an excuse for that because you have 2 young ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just par for the course.
Exactly.
Yes. Or car for the course. any other cool things?
So, you know, it was really nice. I just wanted to say out loud, like, I actually had a really kind of slow morning. I didn't have anything planned. And I feel like I really needed it. And I just wanted to say for our listeners, I mean, it's really nice to get that downtime. I feel like there's something really restorative about not having to fill every hour and, you know, and just actually having a little bit of breathing room.
Oh, I so agree.
Do you know what I mean? Yes. It was like, I haven't had that. I can't even tell you for how long. And it was like, I could feel my body was just sort of chilling out, you know? And it wasn't like I was like eating bonbons watching movies, but like,
your
just,
pace
yeah,
was a little bit calmer.
It was slower.
Right?
It was yeah. really nice.
That's
so,
awesome. I yeah. know we get on such a fast pace, which we'll, I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit more
yes.
about that with our guests for today.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a nice weekend. Christopher's daughter came in. She moved back from Chicago, back to Newport Beach because of those
oh.
horrible student
winters?
Loans. No,
oh.
no. She made Chicago her home, but
oh.
student loans and, you know, a relationship
yeah.
that didn't work out. And so it was really nice to have her. We went to the beach. We took a long walk.
So nice.
We just hung out. We bared our souls. You know, it was really nice to like
oh.
sort of get to the bottom of certain things and conflicts and things like that. So it was really nice.
That's great.
It was very healing, actually. And I'm doing healing with my daughter and my nieces,
good for you.
Like from the whole Tahoe thing. We're sort of like, it's
yeah.
moving along. You know, I really, really espouse letter writing.
Yes.
I think letter writing, when you have a difficult time with
yes.
somebody you care about, it allows for just a little bit of distance,
mm-hmm.
but it's still very intimate. It gives the pause.
Yes.
And I think you can express yourself in a way and check it and make sure that you didn't say something accusatory.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really for that now.
Yay. So good.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
So let's do a quick with our sponsor.
Yes. Sounds good.
Are you getting tired of trying to create a positive life with a negative mind? Vantage Point Recovery believes that the potential wholeness and well-being of our clients depends on a systematic approach to developing an authentic and fulfilling life. Specializing in the treatment of individuals struggling with mental health and substance use disorders, we believe that your journey is our journey. Call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be able to create a shift in the thinking of you or a loved one.
All right, so we're back. Thank you so much, Vantage. And you're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. If you want to give us a call, you can call us at 323-203-0815. And for our Twitter, if you are a Twitter person, we're getting there, is at DocTherapist1, and our website is docandtherapist.com.
And if you missed any of that, it's all up on the show's
exactly.
website. Yes.
So last week we had Karen Muller, who is a war journalist. Super, super interesting show. You know, it's interesting because I don't know if I've gotten so up close and personal with a journalist. And I really loved her point of view about, basically what she was saying, if you missed last week's show, was that everyone is good. And I think a lot of times if we don't know somebody's culture or ethnicity, we kind of tend to shy away or we're a little bit afraid. And she kind of wants people to realize, like, you know, you take a risk because chances are the person's going to, you know, be safe and nice and you might learn a couple things. So I got a lot out of that show. I thought it was really great.
Me too. And what really stood out to me that was so newsworthy to me was that because there's so much sensationalism in journalism, which she is not about.
Yes.
When we're reading that stuff, she said, we're reading about it because, or hearing about it, because it rarely happens.
Exactly.
Not because it happens all the time.
It's such a good point.
So she was pointing out that actually good deeds and kindness and caring toward other people happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we don't see that in the news, but
sure.
that's really her thing was all about really pointing out the
yep.
wonderful qualities of humanity. So she was really cool. So if you missed that show, you can download it from the LA Talk Radio site or iTunes and all those places because it's a great show. Today, we yeah. have a very exciting guest, and I know this is also she's going to appeal to you personally, too, Kelly.
Well, that's how I found her.
That's right.
Yes. So she definitely appealed to me.
So today we have Renee Jane, one of the nation's most respected childhood happiness and resiliency experts. Renee is the founder of Chief Storyteller at GoZen. Millions of parents have turned to Renee and her popular GoZen.com site for insights on how to help their children recalibrate the role that stress plays in their lives so they can convert stress to their advantage. Renee earned her master's degree in positive psychology, the scientific study of optimal human functioning, from the University of Pennsylvania. She is one of fewer than 400 people to attain that degree. Well, that's impressive.
Yeah.
She also has been mentored by and regularly collaborates with some of the top depression prevention experts in the world. Using digital animation, Renee integrates research-based concepts into engaging and digestible learning modules. Her one-of-a-kind programs, Go Strengths and Go Zen, are praised by clinicians, educators, and parents alike. K kids adore these programs too. Welcome, Rini.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me on, Kelly and Deborah. I'm very honored to be here.
She even has like a Zen voice. I love that. It's so good. Well, I just want to share a little bit about how I came across your site. My son has some anxiety. He's seven now, but I came across your site and I absolutely loved it. And it was just this, you know, I was like, what I was looking for that I wish I had found earlier. And it was so, I mean, obviously you'll explain more, but the animations, he absolutely loved. And my son is picky. I mean, he's not one that can kind of watch anything. Like, it has to be really engaging and fun. And he just loved it. And I personally, like, I was watching it with him. Like, I was all into it, too. And the characters were great. And the voices. And we kind of, like, we were both talking about which one, which character we liked and related to. I mean, it's just a fabulous program. So I'm super, super to have you on today. Super happy to have you on today.
Thank you so much. I'm blushing over here. Thank you so much. You know, it's funny because I kind of think of all of the stuff that our kids are going through with stress, and why make the stress management, right, the teaching of stress management heavy? Mm-hmm. What they're going through is already so heavy. So thank you for that. I appreciate that so much.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you talk about a huge myth in our society about stress and children and exacerbating anxiety. Can you share about that, please?
Yes, I think that we all believe we should be living stress-free lives, and that stress kills, you know? So there are, I guess, maybe two myths here. I think that media and society send a really clear message about stress, that it destroys productivity, it sets you on the path toward chronic disease and early death, and, you know, we're scared of it. There's a lot of research upon which, you know, these assumptions are based, but there is such a strong and growing body of research showing us that stress can enhance our performance, our health, and our well-being. And so I think we have such a skewed view of stress and anxiety that we're actually stressed from our stress.
For sure.
I mean, how does it make you feel? Like, when I tell you that stress kills.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, my stressful. Heart rate just started increasing instantly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you stressed? Oh my God, that's, yeah. So, right. So that is a huge myth because, frankly, it's not sound, right? It's not where the research stands. So when we work with kids, the first thing we teach them is that everybody worries. It's part of who we are. It's part of the human condition. And actually, you want a little bit of worry, you know? You want a little bit of anxiety and stress in your life, and it can work to your advantage if you can make it your ally. And so let's teach you how to do that.
I love that. I remember that. That was in the video. And I love that because it's so true. I think it like normalizes immediately kids' feelings. Like, okay, great, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one who worries. And here's something that's not so horrible. You know, even though it can be a horrible feeling. So I really love that you do that straight away, too.
Would that be different than chronic stress? People who are under chronic stress and their immune systems are breaking down, and that would be more of what the research shows, that kind of stress can be harmful?
So I'll tell you that there is this super, I don't reference a ton of studies, but the most interesting study on this, they followed about 30,000 people in the U.S. for 8 years, and they asked them two questions. And the first question was, how much stress have you experienced in the last year or so? Was it a little bit of stress, a moderate amount, or a lot? So you can kind of think of the answer in your head, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then they asked them, which statement do you believe more? That stress can be enhancing, right? It can boost your productivity, your health, your well-being, or that stress is destructive. Which one do you believe more? So it turns out that if you answered in the first question that you had a lot of stress, so what you're referring to, right, is the chronically stressed, you do have an increased chance of mortality. So they followed these people, and it's something like 43% increased risk of death, right, from all of this stress.
Okay.
But the killer thing about this study is that that is only true when coupled with the mindset that stress is harmful.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's fascinating because your mindset about stress, even if you were chronically stressed, if you understand that some stress can be enhancing and good, mm-hmm. it changes the way that stress reacts in your body. Mm-hmm. So you can actually change what stress does for you just by understanding some of its benefits.
I love this. I'm texting my husband immediately.
Yeah, it's like boosting your metabolism for stress, yes. actually.
It's a great way to look at it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I love that.
Me too.
That makes so much sense to me.
So I want to know a little bit more about kids' anxiety, because I know I'm not alone in this camp. Many parents out there, when their child is kind of like in the throes of panic or anxiety, you know, mm-hmm. I've heard a lot, because as a therapist too, it's like nothing works. You know, timeout doesn't work. You know, ignoring mm-hmm. him doesn't work. Comforting him doesn't work. And so I'm curious if you can kind of give us maybe some techniques that that would help some mothers out there and fathers.
Yes, absolutely. Who is a parent who's seen their kids feeling super anxious? How does that not trigger your own anxiety, right? Sure. That makes you anxious because you want to help them. And when they're feeling that way and you try to help them and all of you're giving them compassion and empathy and love and all of these things, and it sort of falls on ears that are not listening, right?
Yeah.
You feel helpless. You feel sort of out of control, helpless, like you can't do anything. So I remind parents, I live in New York City, and several years ago, there was a plane that was making an emergency landing on the Hudson River, and I think they just made a movie about it, right?
Sully.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but I actually saw this happen. So I'm watching this plane come down over the Hudson, and I, you know, of course, I'm thinking, okay, something is very wrong. Obviously, this is post 9/11, and so you're weary about when you see things like that. And so I turn the TV on, and they're saying, oh, there's a commercial airliner, and it has birds in its engine, and it has to land on the Hudson, and so it's going to make this emergency landing. So I watch him make this landing, and it's amazing. He saves all 160 passengers on board. And when they interview him, they do this backstory on him, and they're like, this is Chelsea Sullenberger, and he's, you know, he's been a pilot for 40 years, right? He mm-hmm. was in the Air Force. He's flown commercial airlines for 30 years. He's been flying forever. But when they asked him, what did you do when, you know, you started, when you needed to land the plane? Like, what was one of the first things you did? He said, I grabbed my emergency checklist, so I tell this story to parents because I say to them, this guy had 40 years of flying experience, including military experience. Why did he need a checklist, right?
Yeah.
And it becomes clear to them so quickly, they'll answer very quickly, well, because he was panicked.
Yeah.
He wanted to make sure, you know, he wasn't thinking logically. He wanted to make sure he didn't miss any steps. And I say, that is the same way your child feels when they're super anxious, when they've been thrown into that fight or flight response. They can't access their logical brain and all their tools and all those coping skills you've taught them. They don't want to breathe. They can't hear you, essentially,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
But what if, in a calm state, we could teach them some skills and they go to the ones that they love and they write them down on a piece of paper, maybe even just like 3 to 5, and they have their own checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get into a situation where they can't remember what to do, we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
You're giving a speech, you have to go talk to a boss, you're in a fight with a partner, and you just lose your logic. But if you have something to grab, something palpable, and you can just go through your list, how much easier would that be?
Yes,
so
absolutely.
That's kind of one of the tips.
And just to do a little generalizing here, too, because I work with a lot of people in recovery that have addictions, and we sort of use the same tool with them, is that you write out a list of the things that trigger you and then 10 things that you can do when you're triggered rather than using.
Yes.
So it's so generalizable what you're saying, because I'm sure some people don't relate necessarily to, I don't have anxiety.
Sure.
I don't know what that is, but so this is great.
Yes, I absolutely love that too. And that's an amazing story. I feel
it
like
is.
That is just incredible. Well, and it's so funny because when I hear the tapes of him, he sounded so calm. I mean, given the distress, you know what I mean? Like, I remember remember hearing the tapes and being like, oh my God. I mean, it was just incredible. So, wow, that's really, really, really great. I absolutely love that.
Renee, do you have kids of your own?
I do. I have a 2- and a 3-year-old.
Oh, wow. So you got your hands full.
I have a very long checklist.
Exactly.
For myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, they're amazing, magical beings,
oh,
but they're just
yes. a lot.
They have. I was listening when you guys are talking about the shoe story, and
yeah.
I just crack up because every day one of them says something that's so incredibly profound.
Uh-huh.
Like they're natural born philosophers, I think. You
yes,
know?
For sure.
But they're just being so innocent,
it's
and
so
they can
sweet.
Just crack your life open by like saying, "Why do you have so many shoes?"
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden you have an existential dilemma, right? But they're just being themselves.
Exactly.
We need to have another show
yes.
like that one, Kids Say the Darndest
things
that they
yeah.
used to have years ago. There isn't one out there like
know,
that now.
I love that. I
They're
write down
so
what
cute.
My kids say.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's such a good thing to do. Write it down. Yeah.
Yes, I have a book. There's actually a book out there. It says, like, you know, your quotable kids or something. And I use it for both my kids, and it's invaluable. I just
oh,
love that because you
great.
Forget, you
yeah.
know, a week goes by and you're like, wait, what did they say again? It's really funny.
So cute.
So, okay. So going back to teaching the kids in the calm state, what is typically sort mm-hmm. of maybe the 3 techniques that you found most popular among kids that you feel like work?
So one of the techniques that I think is popular that works is it has to, you know, when I talk to parents, I tell them this has to do with risk assessment, because essentially your ability to assess risk gets thrown out the door when you're really worried, right?
Yeah.
The worried thought is notoriously inaccurate.
Yes.
It gets distorted essentially. So we teach kids in a very simple way to say, what is the most likely best scenario for you, right?
Okay.
What's the worst case scenario? And then what's the worst case scenario, what's the best case scenario, and what's the most likely outcome of what's going to happen? So let's create 3 columns, let's write it down, and then if they're old enough, we say, let's assign a probability to these 3 things. What we're trying to do is really get them to think more accurately.
Mm-hmm.
And when kids are, you know, 6 or 7 and above, they really start to cringe when you say positive thinking. I cringe when people say positive thinking. You know, I have a degree in positive psychology, but I don't like that. Kids don't like that because they think that you're glossing over their problem.
Yes.
So what we try to do for kids is say, listen, the goal is not negative or positive. The goal is accuracy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to go a step further with this, we say, why don't we become thought detectives? We can collect evidence about what you're talking about. So if they come to you and they say, I'm totally going to fail this test. I'm so worried about it. I can't even think about it. I don't know what to do. I can't study. I say, okay, we're not going to invalidate it. I see that you're worried. I totally have been there before. I understand. But let's collect some evidence about your, maybe it's the history of your tests, maybe it's your study habits, right? Let's go, let's collect evidence about if you don't do well on this test, how many others are there, you know? And also, does this define you? And so you're really kind of going around and doing a evidence collection. And then if they really want to go even a step further, I say, okay, why don't we have a debate with ourselves?
Mm.
Or you play one side, I'll play the other, or you play both sides, frankly. And so depending on the age of the kids, I modify this a little bit, but that's a super easy technique that you can use.
I love that.
Another thing that kids really love is, and I'm sorry if you want to interject, absolutely. Another thing they love is learning basic techniques of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a longtime mindfulness practitioner. I teach kids. Kids are natural mindfulness masters. They really are. It's easy for them to be in the present moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
They go from present moment to present moment to present moment. We're kind of stuck in the past and the future, but it's easy for them to come into the present moment. So we teach them, we say, listen, your brain is like a train station, and all of your thoughts are trains. And what you can do is you can be an observer and watch the train come through. You can look at it sitting over your head. You know, when the train stops over your head or the thought stops over your head, you might feel uncomfortable, right? You might feel the physical things, like your tummy might feel funny, your heart might be beating. But if you lean into that discomfort, you don't try to shut it down with distraction or trying to change the thoughts, then I promise you that you will watch it move on. And you'd be surprised. This sounds very esoteric, like is a kid going to understand what you're saying? But if you show them with illustrations and pictures, they're amazing.
Sure.
They are easier to teach them than adults by far, because I've worked with a lot of adults. So that's another technique that we use quite often.
Okay, hold that thought. Don't go away, because we're going to be in suspense for the third most popular technique. A word from our sponsors.
Do you believe your problems of today are going to last forever? This may be a sign of a mental health-related disorder. According to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's 2012 survey on health and drug use, it was shown that roughly 8.4 million adults in the U.S. suffered from mental health and co-occurring disorders. Vantage Point Recovery, specializing in intensive treatment for those struggling with mental health and co-occurring disorders, can help you make forever problems temporary. Located in Thousand Oaks, California, call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be a fit for you or a loved one.
Thank you, Vantage Point Recovery. And we are here today with Renee Jane, one of the most respected childhood happiness and resiliency experts. I love that.
Resiliency
is one of my favorite words on the planet.
Me too.
I just love it. So I love that. So far we've gotten risk assessment, which was number one, and then basic mindfulness. And I love what you said, that children are, they're just sponges for learning this kind of stuff. And it reminded me when, you know, your son said, "Mom, why do you have so many shoes?" And then he's out of the room and he's playing with something
else. It was like, exactly. It's like the moment's gone.
Yeah. And he's on to something else.
Well, and it's so true, because a friend of mine just told me her son was upset that morning. He wanted a specific sweatshirt. He was crying. It had been probably an hour. We were taking a hike. She's like, "Do you think he's still thinking about it?" And I'm like, No. I was like, "He's in class. He hasn't even thought about it for let's see, 59 minutes?
Yes.
Like, I mean, you know, so anyway. But yeah, so what's the third
They're
thing?
They're so amazing at processing emotion. I mean, just that story that you told, you know, we add layers of emotion to the actual emotion.
Yes.
They are able to process it with more purity.
Yes.
So they feel it. They feel it deeply, you know, as we know, especially with the young ones. And then they pass through it.
Yes.
I mean, that is mindfulness. So it's
That's
kind
incredible.
Of amazing.
Yes.
So what's the third one?
So the third one. So one of the popular techniques that we teach in a clinical setting would be gradual exposure therapy.
Mm-hmm.
In our programs, we call it laddering, right? So what this is really creating miniature goals out of your big goal. So let's say that you have a child that is refusing to go to school because they're so incredibly anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And going to school is just this overwhelming goal for them, right? They just cannot even understand how they're going to be able to do that. It's kind of like running a marathon. So instead of thinking about the finish line of getting to the school, what we ask them to do is draw a ladder. On the first rung or the bottom of the ladder, you write down a miniature goal. And it can be super miniature. Like, today I will go to the front door, right?
Mm.
And above that rung, you write down the next goal. So maybe, you know, you'll go to the car. And then you get closer and closer. You know, you'll pack your book bag and you'll get actually to the school door. And then eventually you'll get to the school. So we have kids set up these goals and they co-create them with their parents. And then they do the mini goal until the point where, frankly, they're bored of it or it's not a challenge for them anymore. They go to the door, they go to the door, they go to the door, and they turn to you and say, "Mom, Dad, or caretaker, you know, teacher, I've done it. I can move past the door." Gradually exposing yourself and having the ability to just have these miniature wins, like, yay, I can't get to school, but I can at least, I've accomplished these miniature goals. It is fantastically motivating, right, and achievable for anyone, and we found very effective with
That's
anxiety
so
relief.
Do the schools actually support and allow for that is my question. Like, so you have a second grader who now all of a sudden had been bullied on the schoolyard let's say, you know, a week before and has now developed a fear of school, even though the problem's been handled, maybe that student has been removed, kid won't go back to school, it's already 1 month in. How do you work with the school system themselves to allow for that? I love the process you're talking about, but how realistic is that to implement?
Are you asking the question from the perspective of the school? Would the school support wanting the child back in, or can you clarify
your
question?
So, okay, so you have a child comes is at home, mom's trying to get him in the car to get him to school. He says, I'm not going to school. Panic, anxiety, crying, tears. Mom says, okay, not today. You can stay out of school. But now you start this gradual exposure or laddering process, but that could take, it sounds like, weeks. It could take days, right, or take weeks. Does the school system allow for using that technique to get the child back if it takes that long? Or do they say that the kid just has to get here?
Okay, so that's a great question. And I think so I've worked with a lot of children who are in the situation of school refusal, right? Mm-hmm. And most of the time what happens is that they are being guided by an in-house psychologist or a counselor or a social worker or a teacher, right, through this process. Mm-hmm. And I've been pretty surprised that in public and private schools that you actually have a lot of support from the school. I haven't myself personally seen many situations where a school is like, listen, you're going to be expelled or you're going to suffer the consequence for not coming because of your anxiety. But I think it's because, you know, most of the kids that I've worked with are working with an advocate in the school, and that has been the important point.
Right. Okay. So they'll provide the lesson plans and the work to take home until while you're doing that wonderful process of laddering.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, nice.
Exactly.
Okay. I could just see a lot of parents out there saying, well, that's not practical. That's not going to work, you know, thing. But it sounds like there's.
Yeah, sure.
There's
and I'm wondering,
That's an extreme situation, right? When your child is not going to school, and then what do you do if you have two working parents and you can't stay home? And of course, there is a ripple effect from that.
Right.
Absolutely. And there is absolute impracticality to when your child is refusing to do something.
Well, I'm wondering. Right?
But,
No. I was just going to say, I'm wondering too if you could do those mini goals quicker than you think. So in other words, okay, we don't have to go to school until, you know, maybe we'll just put that aside for a minute. Maybe can you just try to go to the front door? And then they do that. And then it's like, all right, I'm so impressed. You made it to the front door. Do you think you could just make it to the car? Like, do you think that those mini goals could happen quickly rather than slower?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's dependent on the child. I think once they start to see their, you know, they taste success, really, honestly, it becomes easier for them,
right?
Because now you didn't make it such a high level thing where it's like, you have to go to school and that's it. It's black and white. Go to school, you have no other choice, right? And so some kids work through this process very fast. And when mixed together with other things or coupled with other ideas, it can go even quicker, right? This can be a 1 week process.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe you could speak a little bit. There's so much pressure in schools on test scores, you know, state test scores and, you know, entrance exams for things and so much pressure. I mean, there's kids that have so much anxiety just because their parents are always competing for my kid has to get in here and has to do that. And can you speak a little bit to that to help some parents in that mentality to just kind of chill and mellow out and that there's more to learning than just a test score? Because the learning gets lost in my mind.
I think the learning gets lost. I think the spirit of our child gets lost, right? Mm-hmm. I think we get lost. I live in New York City, so I'll give you a little background, right? So I live in New York City, so one of the biggest rat races in the world is right here. I also am of an Indian background, so I'm very familiar with academic pressure. You know, my parents were great, but I understand that culturally. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard, right? Because you start to lose focus on what it is that you're doing and the process. And everything becomes a roadmap to success where you believe that there is sort of a pot of success or happiness at the end of this road. And I think that kids begin to create a blueprint for themselves where it's something like, you know, get good grades, get a good job, go to good school, school, get married, have 2.2 kids. Right. Where's the happiness? Where do you stop, right?
Yeah.
Buy a vacation home and then happiness. So I think the first thing that we need to do is ask ourselves, forget the kids for a second, right? Put that aside. We need to really kind of step back and ask ourselves what success means to us, you know, and not only that, but what are we afraid of? What are we so afraid of if our children don't participate as we want them to in this race? Because what I see happening is we're losing our lives, our daily experiences, our ups and downs, our, you know, the spectrum of experience, basically, because we all we're thinking is goal, 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 you know?
Right.
So how do we get parents to chill out, I believe, was the question. I think one of the first things that we all should do is take a piece of paper and write down our kids' 5 greatest strengths, right? Mm-hmm. I tell parents that they need to channel their inner Yoda, okay? Mm-hmm. And that Yoda was actually, he was a Jedi Knight, right? But he was a mindfulness master, and he had this incredible power called the Force that we all have to guide our children. And that in order to guide them, we need to see them for the light that they have within them. And I'm not talking about, you know, like in the cheesy sense. I'm talking about your child was born with some serious strengths. Mm-hmm. And school, that is how you need to see your child, because school can strip that from them, right? So your child is not the product of a test score. Your child is the essence of their strengths. So that is a starting point. And in that, in being your strengths and in finding, you know, the Force, you can get through anything and you can find your purpose. Because I think what we're doing in all of this racing and trying to get to the end and trying to get the A's and trying to get the good job is that we're losing our essence.
Yeah.
And we're never going to grow as a country and a world when all we're doing is manufacturing children, basically, and putting them through these factories of grades, right?
Sure.
We don't want them all to be the same. They're not all the same.
No.
We need them to do different things. We don't need them to all be engineers. We don't need them to all be doctors. We don't need them to all be X.
Exactly.
We need them to all find their path, and this is not the way to do it. So I know I went a little bit off my fringes.
It's beautiful.
There.
Great, and find their passion. Gosh, I work with so many adults who would never... and never enticed into discovering their passion, and they're miserable at what they do.
Exactly.
They're just doing something because, you know, they followed in one parent's footsteps, or it was the thing that was going to make them money. And it's always so tragic. And you're saying so delightfully that we can start with the seeds of our youngsters and plant their flowers and whatever their seeds show up with. It's so cool.
And let them, you know, I mean, there's obviously, you guys know that there's so much helicopter parenting going on, but I think it's really, I think it's fear. We're clutching these kids so tightly, right? That we're not seeing in them their potential for, they're going to face challenges in their life, and we cannot control that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ours to control. It's ours to guide them. I think that we just need a mindset shift completely, and this will help, that we are not here to control the challenges that our children face. We're here to guide our children through the challenges they will inevitably face.
Yes.
Yeah, so let's bring that down to a real practical question here for a second. So your kid comes home and says, nobody will play with me. Nobody will sit with me for lunch. I have no friends. How would you coach a child in that position?
How heartbreaking, right?
For sure.
I mean, I'm not saying that your heart shouldn't break for your child, because my heart would break for mine. I would bring me probably to tears, I'm sure. You know, my child comes home one day and tells me they don't have anyone to sit with, that they're alone at the, you know, in the schoolyard, and they spend their time alone and they hate school.
Right.
I mean, it's the worst possible story, right? It's tragic. It feels awful. You want to fix it. You want to fix it,
absolutely.
Right? I think that a lot of parenting, and a lot of this I've learned in the last few years of being a parent myself, is to go against your instincts, really, you know, in that situation. I think I think the first thing that your child needs before you fix anything is that you find your own strength, because you're going to need it, okay, as a first step. I think the second thing that they need is they need to feel connected to you, that you are not going to immediately start problem solving, that you are going to leave an open pathway for them to communicate, because this is a, that's just a surface level thing that they're telling you. I'm sitting alone. Well, you know, you want to know all the whys, you want to know what's going on. You're only going to get that when you connect with your child, right?
Sure.
So you connect with them, you, and that can be in, and I'm being practical here, but connecting with someone can be an energy. I mean, think about when you come home and you have a really bad day at work, and you come home to your partner or whomever, and you say, I had a terrible day at work. And they just kind of, they're doing their own thing. They don't say anything, right? But they're kind of dismissing you in a way. You don't feel connected to them.
Right.
So really authentically, and then you think, well, I'm going to call my best friend because you're not listening to me, right? So it's the same thing with our kids. It's the same thing with our kids. Mm-hmm. They want to authentically connect to you, that you are feeling their problem. So, you know, feel your kid. Be like, I feel you. I feel you. That is painful. Mm-hmm. Tell me, you know, please tell me what's going on. When you open that up and you connect to them, you build that bridge, at least you'll know what's going on. How are you going to help solve a problem or co-solve a problem with them if you have no idea what's happening? So that is my most practical advice I can give, is connect with your child in a real, on a real level, right? And then begin to problem solve and give your kids some credit. They have a wellspring of resilience within them. Mm-hmm. If you allow them to see that, you know, and allow them to use it.
Wonderful. We're going to hear from our sponsor, and then when we come back, we're going to find out the number one most common mistake that parents make when trying to calm anxiety in their kids.
Do you swear off drugs or alcohol in the morning, only to succumb to the thought later in the day? According to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's 2012 survey on drug use and health, it was shown that roughly 8.4 million adults in the U.S. suffered from addiction and mental health-related disorders. Vantage Point Recovery, specializing in intensive treatment for those struggling with addiction and mental health-related disorders, has a place for you. Located in Thousand Oaks, California, call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be a fit for you or a loved one.
Hi, we're back.
Yes, talking with Renee Jane. We only have a few more minutes, but we want to hear, what is the number one mistake parents make when trying to calm anxiety in their kids?
Telling them to relax.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. I just wrote that in one of my notes to somebody, that, you know, that I'm so tired of people telling me, why don't you just relax,
that.
Instead of, how can I help you find a way to relax? You know, how do you help me, instead of, oh, just relax? Or I used to hear, you're too sensitive. Why do you make mountains out of molehills? Like, what the fuck?
Or I had a friend who would be like, just don't worry about it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah,
no
right.
problem.
Yeah,
yeah, no
great.
Problem. I'll just throw it in my back pocket. Like, I mean, it's just so funny.
Do you even see your reactions when I say to relax? It goes against human. It's irritating.
Totally.
Nobody wants to be told to relax.
Ugh.
It goes against human nature. It also goes against the science.
Ugh.
So when you're going into a test or you're going into a performance, for example, you actually don't want to relax. Because that stress can help you, right?
Oh,
it can help you rise to the challenge.
Yeah,
And so you just, if you reframe the stress and saying, you know, my body's getting excited, it's preparing me for this challenge, you can actually make the stress work for you. So please don't tell your kids to relax.
Okay.
They don't like it.
Oh,
we don't
so
like it.
I'm so glad you said that. I feel so validated right now.
I'm like taking copious notes right now. Like, I'm so impressed, really. Like, this is just so helpful. And I love that it's so practical. I mean, I feel like I, you know, have a toolkit to take with me, and that's what the videos do, too. I mean, it's just wonderful. Yeah.
So is the research still does the research still hold up that speaks to moderate amounts of anxiety actually has higher correlation with better performance, whereas no anxiety or too high has decreased performance?
Correct, yes. The research still holds up. And there's someone named Allison Woods Brooks, out of Harvard Business School that does a lot of research on this. And she tests people across domains in different performance situations, and that research absolutely holds up.
Wow, this is incredible. So for the last few minutes, maybe if you can share, I guess, A, how people can get to your site, and maybe any kind of last, you know, parting words that you feel like is super important for parents, or mistakes or tips or anything else you feel is super important.
Yeah. So you can find our work at GoZen, which is GOZEN.com. And we have lots of articles. We have lots of videos. We do a lot of animations. And what we try to do is making all of the stuff, learning the skills of resilience, fun for kids. We try to make it engaging for them. We try to make it humorous, you know, dare we be funny with the kids. And so that it's, you know, when parents ask us, well, how do I get my kids to watch these videos? I say to them, if you have to make them watch it, then we've done something completely wrong.
Yes.
And in terms of parting words, I would say to parents out there, because I work with a lot of parents, that we are so hard on ourselves. We have so much guilt that we hold for every little thing that those little spirits that are with us, that they do, especially for parents who have kids who are anxious, who come to me and say, I don't know if I've caused the anxiety. I'm anxious myself. They've probably learned it from me. I cannot tell you how incredible every parent I meet is. To me, they are superheroes, and I have absolutely no doubt that their kids are looking at them and looking at a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for parents, it's so important not to forget that, to speak to yourself with compassion, not only because it's going to get you closer to your goals, but because that's the voice that your children are going to internalize. That's the way they are going to speak to themselves. Mm-hmm. So please be kinder to yourself and be more gentle with yourself and be more forgiving and let some of that guilt go. Please.
That's beautiful, beautiful
Absolutely.
Words. So, so true, so helpful.
So again, we've been talking with Renee Jane. She is the founder of GoZen.com, and I personally have used it. It's fantastic. And we just, yeah, super happy to have you on.
I have to say something funny. When you first sent me the email that you found this great woman, and she's got a site called GoZen.com, I read it as GoZen, and I'm like, what the hell is a GoZen?
So you got to pause.
Go
you don't know what a GoZen is?
Well, ironically, you got to slow down to read it. You know what I mean? Because it's like,
So it's a GoZen or a GoZen.
Exactly.
Either way, you'll get to the same place, GoZen.com. And Renee Jane, you have been a delight, so informative, and just so kind.
Yes.
We love you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I love you guys too, Kelly and Deborah. Thank you so much for having me on. It's truly an honor.
Oh, wonderful.
Take care.
And continuing on, next week we have the more beautifulness.
Yes, this so
is,
cool.
Equine-assisted psychotherapy, and our guest will be Dr. Val Coleman. And I encountered this on a continuing education seminar I went out to the ranch and I got to experience the stuff with the horses. And I'm telling you, it is magnificent.
This is horse therapy.
This is horse therapy.
So
and
cool.
So much more than that. It's just the horses are an instrument to you really doing some inner discovery that just is profound.
I have a story about that I can't wait to talk to her about.
Okay.
Because, it'll be interesting to hear her reaction too. So
and
I can't
she's
wait.
Amazing too. She's just got this demeanor about her. She's funny. She's intelligent. She's warm. She's kind. She's all these things. So she's really looking forward to being on, and we are looking forward to having her on. So I can't believe it.
I know.
Another 50 minutes just flew by like it was just a blink and a blip in life.
So fun. And I'm calmer now, too, which
Me
is really
too.
Nice. She had a great soothing voice.
So wonderful. Okay, so go visit us at our website, docandtherapist@gmail.com. Like us on Twitter, please. It really means a lot to us, @DocTherapist1. And we can't wait for you guys to listen to us next week.
Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.